Hello and welcome to another episode of Mind Ki Baat, where we discuss the part that really matters, your mind, or specifically mental health. I am your host, Shardul, and in this episode, we'll discuss one other major mental illness, which most people haven't heard of, at least in my opinion, in India. I hadn't till a couple of years ago. Our episode is focusing on OCD this week, which is obsessive compulsive disorder.
I feel like a lot of people don't know what OCD is. It stands for obsessive compulsive disorder, not obsessive cleaning disorder, nothing to do with cleaning disorder.
It is a chronic and long-lasting disorder in which a person has varying degrees of uncontrollable and unwanted intrusive thoughts or urges.
You can't see OCD. So it really gets to me when people say, like, well, I don't see you anxious, I don't see you depressed, I don't see you doing things multiple times.
So that can lead to lots of hand washing.
It's categorized as one of the top 10 most disabling disorders by the World Health Organization for a reason.
Fear of getting sick and more of a fear of yourself being dirty or unclean.
Well, painting my nails, oh, if you don't paint your nails 5 times in a row, somebody's gonna kill you.
Imagine being forced to think about your greatest fear every second of every day and having no willpower to stop.
This is a News Laundry podcast, and you're listening to Mind Ki Baat.
And to talk about it, we have with us Nipuna Singh. Nipuna is a forensic and counseling psychologist with over 8 years of experience. She works in the area of sexual abuse, crime, and trauma, adverse childhood experiences, and of course, OCD. So she is currently a PhD scholar at Delhi University. Our second guest is Manvi Tiwari. She is a lived experience expert and activist of OCD and anxiety. Manvi sits on several advisory boards and councils, including Generation Unlimited India's Young People's Action Team at UNICEF, Country Leadership Committee at the Global Mental Health Peer Network, and many other such organizations. Manvi was also one of the youngest speakers at the World Health Summit 2022 in Berlin. So, welcome Nipuna and welcome Manvi, both of you. Welcome to News Laundry.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much.
Apologies if I sound anxious, because I am. Today is my anxiety day, but it cannot be helped. People who listen to this podcast would understand. But before we move ahead, let me give you a brief and a very general definition of OCD, and then we'll go to experts. OCD, or obsessive compulsive disorder, is considered to be the fourth most common mental illness in the world. But what it is? What is OCD? And when I was researching it, I found that it can affect people of all ages and gender. And there is no specific age or gender criteria that one or the other would be affected more by it. Now, what OCD does is, it affects, how do I put it? Everyone has felt obsessive about something, because it's a word which we use commonly. But sometimes we use obsessive for people being passionate, sometimes people being just too careful. I mean, who hasn't checked their own work twice or thrice sometimes, just to be sure? But what OCD does is, when this behavior, when these intrusive thoughts or impulses become so extreme that you end up doing them at least for 1 hour a day, which I read.
Yes.
When I opened the Mayo Clinic definition, it said that any person who is facing OCD, who's living with OCD, they do anything to mitigate their behavior or just to reduce their stress. They have to do it at least an hour a day. And this becomes so extreme that even if they know that that activity would not reduce their stress, they still do it because not doing it would increase their stress further. It may sound confusing, but that is why we are here. So, Nipuna, I would like to come to you first.
Mm-hmm.
For our listeners and for me as well. It sounds like...
anxiety?
No, not anxiety, but the disease itself is quite nuanced, because I feel a bit obsessive about news. I work in a news organization, but I don't think I am stressed by or stressed for consuming news. Although I am a news junkie, I consider myself a news junkie. But I have seen a couple of people in my life who I now know, with the benefit of hindsight, that they were suffering from OCD. And I'll give you the example, then I'll give you the floor. I knew an auntie. Auntie wouldn't be the right word. She was near the age of my grandmother.
Hmm.
And she had this thing for cleanliness, which I didn't know what it was. But she was so obsessive about it, because there is no other word I can find, that even if somebody sat on her bed for 5 minutes, she had to change everything.
The sheets. Yeah.
She had the foot mats. She had to clean the utensils. She had to clean the sofa and the floor if somebody walked on it for over 5 minutes. And as kids, like I was, I think, 8 or 9 years old, I found it a bit funny. And I am sorry to say, but full disclosure, that's what we do at News Laundry. I used to make her life trouble for a bit. But now I know that that might have been, and I think most probably it was OCD. So please, if you can, and if it's easy for us to understand, explain it to us. How does that work? How it happens?
See, when we talk about OCD, we divide it into two basic things. The first is obsession and the second is compulsion.
Mm-hmm.
So when we talk about obsessions, what are obsessions? When we say, oh, you know, I'm obsessive about these things. So we generally are talking about that I'm meticulous. I double check it and I make sure that it's correct. But here, when we talk about it, obsessions, we are talking about involuntary, recurrent, intrusive thoughts that, you know, pop up in your head. And these are generally quite unpleasant. They are stress-inducing. They are distress-inducing. They're anxiety-provoking, right? For example, one of the most common manifestations of OCD is related to, getting dirty or coming in contact with germs or getting sick off of other people, right? So you have these intrusive, persistent thoughts in your mind that will tell you that, you know, if that person sits on my bed, they're going to give me some kind of a disease, they're going to give me some kind of germs.
Mm-hmm.
But what is different is that, even I'm a cleanliness freak, okay? I have different clothes that I wear outside and I do not sit with those clothes on my bed.
Okay.
And I don't let my friends put their handbags on my bed or sit on my bed. They know this.
Mm-hmm.
But this is not a situation that causes me so much distress, even if they sit on it. I'm not going to probably change it. I'm not going to like it, but I wouldn't change it.
Yeah.
But a person who's suffering through OCD would not be able to contain their anxiety, would not be able to deal with it unless they do something about it. So the entire notion of managing their distress at this point of time goes out of the window. And what happens in a lot of cases is that with obsession, they develop compulsions as well.
Mm-hmm.
And these compulsions are ways to deal with the anxiety caused due to obsessions.
Right. So this is why I said that even the definition is a bit nuanced, at least in my opinion, for my thick brain. Because like you said, even if we don't do that thing which we like I like to keep my stuff on a specific place, like keys and everything has to be on a specific spot in my house so that I can find them even if it's dark. But if it doesn't happen, that won't cause me, you know, that won't cause me some kind of pain internal or, you know, just too much anxiety that it's almost impossible to bear.
Yes, but that's going to happen with somebody who's suffering through OCD.
Okay. And that fear of stress brings compulsiveness, or the compulsiveness comes from within? Or are they just...
It's, you know, not necessarily overlapping.
Okay.
But it can be a vicious circle. So there are, cases where people might have just obsessive thoughts and people might just have compulsive habits.
Okay.
Or it could be a mixture of both.
So it's not necessary, but it may happen that one may fuel the other.
Yes, especially when there are both. It is a cycle. It is
right.
A process that instigates the other one. So if I feel that somebody has, I've shaken hands with somebody and I think I'm going to catch some germs, what am I going to do? I'm going to disinfect my hands. I'm going to wash them repeatedly.
Mm-hmm.
So if I touch my phone, I've read news that, you know, your phone is as dirty as a toilet. So that's dirty.
Yes.
So I need to go wash my hands again. And then I'm going to think that, you know, I've kept my phone on the desk and I've touched the desk. So you're going to disinfect that. Right. So what happens is that sometimes you have, and this is a very rational outcome. If you think that you have germs on your hands. If you are dirty, if things are not clean, you're going to, go disinfect it or wash your hands or clean the table or whatever. Mm-hmm. But sometimes these compulsions could be unrelated. They could be bizarre. They could be, strange. For instance, if I am anxious that, while driving, I'm going to hit somebody, right? So for me, I might have compulsions where I have to go out, check my car, check whether all my tires are working. If I feel, I drive for half a kilometer and then I have to get down again and check again that, I haven't hit somebody.
Mm-hmm.
So compulsions could manifest in such manners as well, which have nothing to do with, a rational outcome. At that point of time.
So rationality goes out of the window. I mean, that's...
Not every time, but in a lot of cases, yes.
Yeah. So before I go to Manvi, one other question. We gave examples of cleanliness, mine and yours. Can you give us at least a couple more that how this obsessiveness or compulsiveness of the behavior may translate itself into life? For people to understand.
Yeah. I give the example of germs and cleanliness because it's the most common sub-criteria.
Yeah, yeah.
But there are others as well. People who like symmetry, they like perfection, things to be in their own order.
Mm-hmm.
Then there are people who feel that they're not in control of their aggression, that they might abuse somebody. So they worry about, they keep getting these intrusive thoughts that, I'm going to abuse somebody. I might slap somebody. I might hit somebody. There could be recurrent thoughts about taboo things, involving sex, religion,
yes,
all those kind of things.
And another question popped into my head which seems to be related: are there any subtypes of OCD?
There are no subtypes as in general, but there are some categories, there are some areas that we see that has more prevalence.
Okay.
I've talked about the germs.
Yes.
And I've talked about the symmetry. And these are the things that we see quite a lot and which is common in most people. But there are other ways it can manifest, but it's not that prevalent.
Okay. Thank you. And Manvi, I would like to come to you now. Listening to what we have heard from Nipuna, for me, it sounds quite, I think the word I'm searching for is daunting. It can be quite daunting if you live with OCD, because if you don't do something which you feel compelled to do, you're going to be stressed out. But if you keep doing it, a lot of time is going to pass by and, just... You are going to alienate people, because that's how people are, at least in my opinion.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
You talk about it regularly. You have been talking about it. Please educate us how you manage it and how you deal with it on day-to-day basis, which is most important and most difficult to understand for people.
I think, when Nipuna said everything perfectly, I think, but speaking from lived experience, I remember my therapist telling me that... one of the main things I asked her, that a lot of times people are like, a lot of people started to tell me that you're doing this because of your OCD. And I told them that, no, this is not because of my OCD. So people kind of started to like classify everything, as an outcome of my obsessive compulsive disorder. So one thing that my therapist always said was if it's giving you anxiety, that's one criteria. And if it's meddling with your daily life, like it's giving you this much anxiety that it starts to meddle with your daily life, then that, is OCD. And besides that, a lot of people have normal worries, normal tension, which is also like healthy in some amount.
Mm-hmm.
So, that's when that's not OCD. So it's kind of like that. That is my way of now, after speaking to my therapist, how I differentiate between what's OCD and what's just, a normal thing, normal worry, normal tension. Living with it, definitely not easy. There was a point I lost like 13 kgs of weight because, of all the anxiety, wasn't able to eat much. I would throw up after I ate something.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of like, that's definitely difficult. But I think the growing awareness and all of that definitely does make it easier to talk about it. And obviously there's also the, you know, other people make it difficult, like you said, you know, the fact about alienating and how much time it actually goes into, you know, like those obsessions, first of all, which are, you know, inside of your head. And after that, the compulsions, which are kind of like actions, you know. So that definitely happens. And at one point in time, it was so much that, you know, at that point, I was in 12th grade. It was board exams. So obviously, it was that was the time I had to focus on my board exams. The pandemic was on. Everything was already going haywire. So, so it was already very difficult. And it does take a lot of your time. But again, like I said, with growing awareness, with people becoming increasingly aware and accepting that, okay, mental health is a thing and we need to take care of it. And it is equally important as physical health. You know, it's kind of getting easier to talk about it. So, I think that's the positive part for now.
Right. And I'm glad you're talking about it because we need people to talk about mental health issues openly. But what I got from what you said, at least one thing I picked up was, as you're talking about it, there is, you know, real danger of being boxed into a criteria that anything and everything you do, people, out of convenience, if nothing else, say, like, you're just acting out of this. Which I have heard and many other people have heard about their own problems. But OCD seems to be one which seems to put the danger of being boxed in a lot, at least to me. Because if I assume that you're passionate about your work and you push on an opinion or a point, I assume, of course, that this is a hypothetical.
Yeah.
So like you said, people say, like, you're just acting out of your OCD. Am I correct to understand that? Is that possible? Does that happen?
That actually happens a lot. You're kind of like, you know, so now, like, even if you have, you know, like, people have gone up to the extent where I'll tell you what, I have maybe, you know, a favorite cheesecake or a favorite snack that I like to have. And if I, you know, like, we have routine orders, right? So if I go to a cafe and I order that, like, daily, so people have gone up to the extent, people really close to me have gone up to the extent where they said that, you know, I think this is also part of your OCD, the fact that you kind of like get obsessed with the one food or the one dish that you're having.
Oh,
and,
no.
You know, so it's really that stigmatized and it's really that misunderstood that people kind of like put everything, you know, they kind of associate everything with that one part of your life, you know, like when I talk about OCD, that's, you know, my entire personality is not about my disorder. There's a lot more to my personality. And when you associate like every single one of my choices with that disorder, it kind of like, you know, it's disrespectful for starters. And it's also like, you know, sometimes you also kind of like end up thinking, because so many people are saying it to you, so many people are putting you into a box, and they're so convincingly doing it, like they're so convinced in themselves, that you kind of are like, you know, are they actually like telling the truth? Is it actually so? So, you know, the good thing is that I had access to help. I still have access to help. And so I was able to go to a professional and ask them that, you know, somebody said this. So is it actually true? Could this be my OCD as well? And, you know, my therapist, she actually told me, like I said earlier, that she told me the two criterions, and I was able to classify that, okay, that's not my OCD. So, you know, that's how it's worked for me so far. But yeah, definitely, boxing is definitely a very common phenomenon.
So for our listeners, I'd like to just tell everyone, Manvi is, I believe, 19 years old. So she's quite young, and like anybody who has been through their life understand that what she is doing, like, it took me at almost 40 years to do. So I really appreciate what you're doing, and the good luck to you. Like, you found courage to start speaking so early in your life. Kudos to that. Nipuna, I wanted to touch on something which popped into my head when Manvi was speaking. Is there a progression to this? Like, many mental health problems or conditions just present themselves as they are. Some have a path of progression that they'll get worse if not addressed over the time, or they present some markers. So what I'm trying to ask is, from a layman's perspective, let's assume there is a person who suspects they may have it. How do they find out? How do they identify? And how do they deal with it? It's a big question in small words, so I'm sorry. Please go on.
No, thanks for the question. And Manvi said it very nicely and correctly that, you know, do you derive any kind of joy out of doing those certain things?
Yes.
I could have, you know, a compulsion to organize things, but is it giving me joy or is it increasing my stress if that thing is, you know, unable to get completed by me? Mm-hmm. Right. The way you said that you like your things to be organized so that you can have them the way they are.
Yeah.
So what is the main reason behind you doing something like this? Is it for better organization or is it, you know, these intrusive thoughts that are telling you that things have to be perfect or something bad is going to happen? Yeah. Right.
What I wanted to ask was, is there a progression? One.
Yes.
And two, how does anyone tell that, dude, I may have OCD? Like, how do they identify?
It's mostly a progression because things do not, mostly it does not start in a full-blown manner as with other diseases or health conditions.
Mm-hmm.
Generally, people don't immediately go to a doctor or a healthcare provider when they are not feeling good, whether it's a mental health issue or a physiological issue. If you have, you know, pain in your stomach, you're not going to go to the doctor. You're going to take, I don't know, what do people take? A paracetamol?
People don't self-medicate. Like, I always tell people, don't self-medicate.
You shouldn't, but people do.
Yes.
They will try everything.
This is India.
They will try every nuska and totka.
Including gomutra. But yes, please go on. Yes.
Yeah, they'll try everything before they actually have to go to a doctor. And we generally go to the doctor when things have progressed to a large degree.
Yes.
And things have gotten bad and our day-to-day life is hampered. People have started to comment on it. You are isolating yourself from others. You are developing other symptoms like depression and anxiety. Because we all feel sad, for example. We all feel stressed, but we don't immediately go to the doctor.
Yeah.
If you are in a stressed state of mind and work and other responsibilities keep piling up and you're unable to manage it, it's going to progress and accumulate and collect.
Yes.
And when you are unable to deal with this, this is when you are going to go to the doctor. So if by chance, you are having compulsive or obsessive thoughts about cleanliness or all those kind of things, they're not going to start in a full-blown manner. They'll probably start with something small and you're not going to find this, you know, alarming or different or difficult.
Right.
It might, organize things for you. It might sort things out for you for a short period of time. But when it does become difficult is when you start losing touch with other aspects of your life, when it starts consuming your entire day and your interaction with others. You stop going out with people because you have such an extensive ritual that you are unable to manage your time. It's just easier to stay home and do what you're doing rather than going out and then doing everything again.
So I have one question and one point to make, and please correct me if I'm wrong. So what I got was that these intrusive thoughts may just begin as bothersome things, like things which bother you, which you find bothersome, like this is wrong, I need to do this, right? And again, please correct me if I'm wrong, but they become not from I like doing this or I think this should be done or this is convenient to I have to do this or something may go wrong. Am I correct?
Yes. It can manifest as that, but it's not immediately jumping to the bad things that could happen. It could be persistent thoughts that are there in your head, or they could appear as visual stimuli to you. An image would pop in your head again and again that this is something that I need to do, right? And have you ever been nagged by somebody?
Yes.
Imagine yourself nagging you constantly. Nobody likes that.
Yeah.
So we are going to react either in an irritated manner or we are going to, do what the thoughts are telling you to do.
Right.
Because it's more soothing.
I get it. So Manvi, I want to ask you this. You are living with it. I assume that you might have gotten ultimately, if not in the beginning, support from your family and people around you. But how did this, this conversation begin in your personal life? Besides what you talk about in the public, in your personal life, how did this begin that, look, I may have this problem, or our daughter or sister might have this problem, and how do you personally begin to deal with it? Because I ask this question because one of the biggest problems in India, and this point has come up again and again in many episodes, and specifically in Stigma One, that just to start talking about mental health issues in India is a big taboo. Like, there is a very real danger of some, if not many, you know, categorizing you as loon, if nothing else.
Definitely, yeah.
Please go on, if you can educate us. How did it begin for you, and how does anyone who may come from a small town and, you know, less privileged, how do they start dealing with it personally?
So with me, my family has always, you know, we've had some history of mental health conditions in the past in my family. And so, you know, I call it a privilege when it should technically not be a privilege at all. It should be a basic right.
Yeah.
But with the current scenario, it was a privilege that I had easy access to professional help. So, you know, it started very pretty simply for me, actually. I often found myself, you know, doing things that caused me a lot of anxiety, you know, and, you know, there was this weird feeling in my chest and, you know, breathing patterns were not very normal and all of those things. So, you know, it seemed like anxiety. And during the pandemic, especially, you know, a lot of people struggled with poor mental well-being. So,
yes.
You know, having known through that family history of mental health conditions before, having known that what a mental health condition looks like,
mm-hmm.
I had some idea that, you know, this I could be struggling with poor mental well-being is, you know, at least I wasn't sure what condition that is and if it is a condition at all. But, you know, I knew that I could use professional help at the moment. So that's how it started. I told my mom and my, you know, my mom and my dad, my sister, that I think I want to seek help. So they were pretty cool about it. They were pretty supportive about it. You know, because how, you know, mental health, poor mental well-being is not very normalized right now. And, you know, if somebody is diagnosed with a, you know, with a mental health condition or, you know, that's actually worrisome if somebody is diagnosed with a mental health condition. But, you know, even if somebody says that they want to seek therapy or, you know, see a psychiatrist just to like consult them, you know, if there is anything in the first place or not, even that is seen as something which is, you know, which gets people very troubled, you know, very worried, because people think that, you know, like there's this common notion, like it's gotten very little now. People don't believe in it in that as much. But earlier, if, you know, mental health conditions were seen as a very big deal, if you want to seek a psychiatrist or a therapist, you know, you're considered crazy. You're considered, you know,
pagal.
Like it's, yeah, pagal. Exactly.
So it still is. I apologize. I interrupted you. The awareness is mostly in metro cities. For the most
true,
of
true.
India,
absolutely.
It's still true. So, yeah. Please go on. Please go on.
So that's what. So, you know, being from a small town, a town which, you know, which isn't a metro city. So, you know, that kind of happened. But I was, like I said, I was privileged. It shouldn't be a privilege, but it is. And I seeked help. And, you know, that's when I was actually diagnosed. My psychiatrist diagnosed me with obsessive compulsive disorder.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, medications, therapy, and things started to get better as well. So that was how the conversation went. But, you know, I, at the same time, that entire process kind of made me realize how difficult it is for any normal person, especially young people, you know, who do not have the money to be spending on therapy right now, because therapy is so expensive.
Yes, it
is. So any young people especially, you know, because the numbers are rising among young people right now, how do they seek help really? Like, it's so difficult to seek help because, first of all, you kind of have to fight, you know, these certain notions that have been fit in your head since a very young age. You have to fight all that self-stigma. After that, you have to fight all the societal stigma that there is. And after that, when, you know, you finally feel like, okay, I might be ready to seek help, what about those towering prices of therapy and, you know, consulting a psychiatrist or any professional? So, you know, I think it's very difficult. But the good thing is there's a positive side to it, that there's a lot of organizations right now, a lot of psychiatrists, therapists, psychologists and professionals that are willing to give student discounts, willing to even provide services for free. And, you know, so I think that's a good thing.
So Manvi, we'll touch upon the subject where to seek help in the end. I want to ask you something which I think only you can answer.
Yeah.
So you're from an age group which I left long ago. Like, I think I was born old. But besides that point, How did you talk about this in your own age group? Because like that is one of the most troublesome thing. How do you tell your friends? How do you tell your peers who you may know from, let's say, singing classes, dancing classes, or painting classes, or whatever, right?
Yeah.
People you like to hang out with. But if you're open about it, like in intelligent conversations in where people have to maintain decorum or civility, it's a different thing. But how do you talk about it with your peers who can, you know, easily pull your leg or even sometimes, you know, if not full-blown bullying, but, you know, shadow bully you? How do you talk about that in those circles? If you can give us a picture, of course, if you're comfortable with it.
No, definitely. Yeah. I think, initially, like when I was diagnosed with it and everything, I did not talk to anybody about it, really. It was just my family and the professionals that I was seeing. Only they knew about what I was going through. Nobody else really knew about it. It took me a lot of months to actually, you know, months of taking medication, months of speaking to my family, speaking to my therapist. And after that, I finally felt like, okay, now I can finally, I think, you know, maybe I'm ready to tell somebody and tell my friends maybe. So what I did was that before telling my friends, I felt like this is something, you know, I kind of was aware of the stigma that surrounds mental health. So I kind of like, you know, started writing these, you know, firsthand articles, and they surprisingly got taken up by a lot of publications, which made me realize, you know, that there's a lot of stigma. That is why, you know, such firsthand experiences are being published.
But how did your friends respond to it when you told them?
So it was actually, you know, I don't know, I call it like positive stigma, but it was kind of like I started to be treated like a raw egg, you know. So they were very careful around me. They were like, you know, they treated me as somebody who's very delicate and as somebody who might just, who's like very fragile.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, so they were trying to be supportive, but I don't know, maybe they've been conditioned that way, you know, since forever, that they kind of like started to be very careful around me, and started to, you know, and I started to kind of feel like, you know, am I really that, you know, that fragile? So, you know, it was kind of like that. But I think over the years, with the growing awareness, it's gotten better. And now there's still some shadow bullying that, you know, you use the right term, the absolute perfect word. A lot of times, you know, now things are such that OCD is like trivialized. So, you know, while I'm at college, I hear a lot of young people just like throw it around like a slang and be like, you know, I'm so OCD.
Yes.
But then it just kind of pisses me off a lot, because I mean, I understand if somebody, you know, not everybody has the resources to actually get a diagnosis. So I understand if somebody actually feels that they, you know, are going through OCD. But a lot of people just like equate very little things to OCD and throw it around like a slang, which then gets annoying. So, you know, a lot of those things have been happening, but we're working on them.
Yes. Thank you for sharing that. Nipuna, so you heard what Manvi said. So one, if you want to add something to it, of course, please go on. Otherwise, I want to ask you, are there any comorbidities which, you know, tag along with it? Because generally what I found out researching the whole spectrum of mental health problems, they don't come alone. They bring sort of their relatives with them. So that's one. And of course, you want to add something to what she said?
She's right that there's still such a huge stigma associated with mental health issues. I would say, compared to what I saw 10 years ago, things have changed, as you said, in metro cities, but things have changed. And because we have more resources, because we have more visibility now because of social media, and people do not shy away from sharing their perspectives, their feelings, their struggles, more people are aware about it. Right? And I'll give you a very simple example. 10, 20 years ago, if you had told somebody that you had depression, and people did not understand what depression was at that point of time. Sad, theek ho jaoge, khush raho. So that should fix your depression. You know, I remember when Deepika Padukone talked about her depression, and there used to be, you know, like...
Oh.
But itne bizarre comments the. There are so many things like she has all the money in the world. She's so pretty. Ye ameero ke chochle hain. I don't understand why. What does she have to be depressed about?
Yes.
So depression does not see your bank balance before arriving yes, at your yes, doorstep. Yes. Ki, oh, you're rich. I'm going to spare you. No, no. So
yes.
It comes with other issues. But there's a thing called zeitgeist, right?
Mm-hmm.
Basically means mahol,
yeah,
environment.
Yeah, yeah.
There's a time for it. And I feel that in India, there is a zeitgeist for mental health at this point of time. Because compared to what it was 10 years ago, and I'm going to be very honest, when I psychology wasn't my first choice. I was pushed into it by the parents and they're like, bahut scope hai. Jao karo.
Yes. That is the soul. I'm sorry. I interrupted you. I think that is the sole motivator of most parents in India. Scope bahut achha hai. Paise banenge, kar lo.
For the first 5 years, I did not see any scope. I'm like, okay. Where's the scope? Because, you know, if people have money to spend on a psychiatrist compared to a psychologist, they yes. would rather go to a psychiatrist.
Yes.
Because we don't like going to the doctors, but we love doctors because they give us medicines and medicines are supposed to magically fix us instantly. Yeah. Right? And therapy requires talking and you don't understand how it can help you. And it requires hard work, time, persistence, consistency, and it requires for you to do the work. And if you don't want to do the work, then you're not going to see any results.
Yes.
Right. And you would see a lot of individuals who are brought to the doctors or psychologists are not there voluntary. Right. They're brought in by friends or family members because now what they are going through is disrupting their life as well.
Yeah.
And a lot of people in India, and I think worldwide also, let people deal with their problems as long as it's not infringing on them.
As long as it's not our problem.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So if you are depressed, okay, fine, be depressed. But don't bum me out.
Yeah.
But now you're bumming me out, so you need to fix it. Okay.
You know, this thing came up in our previous episode also of bipolar, where the person who was discussing, Sandhya, was saying that even though people want to talk about it, they don't want to understand it.
Yeah, they don't.
Like, even if they want to, you know, popularize this thing or, you know, circulate this thing more, they just do it, they just want to do it with a 10-foot pole. Like, don't bring it close to us. You know, talk about it as much as we want, but don't bring it close to us. So you're right about this.
See, you cannot actually truly empathize with something unless you've gone through it.
Yeah.
You cannot really understand what anxiety the other person is going through unless you yourself have experienced anxiety at yes. one point of time. Reading about it theoretically and experiencing it are very
completely
different things.
Yes.
It blows you away and it's ridiculous, honestly. And only when you go through something do you truly understand ki dusra kya feel kar raha hai. And
yes.
even then you might not, because you know there are different spectrums, you know, how early did you get intervention, all those kind of
yes.
things.
Yes, that matters a lot. Like, at least in some conditions, I know about one of mine, that the later you find out, most probably your life has become much, much worse. But you touched upon a subject which most people don't know about, and surprisingly, I didn't think of it in earlier episodes. Most people don't know the difference between psychologist and a psychiatrist, and they think
yes.
they are interchangeable. And
no, they're not.
just like ek dawai deta hai, ek nahi deta bas. So, if you can educate all of us, our listeners, what is the difference, and how does one know which one to go to?
All right, very quickly, a psychiatrist mm-hmm. is a medical doctor.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody who's done their MBBS and then probably their MD, and they deal with patients, and they, not that they don't do therapies, but generally they deal in pharmacological intervention.
Mm-hmm.
They prescribe medication for individuals to deal with their illnesses.
Yes.
Psychologists, on the other hand, do not prescribe medication to anybody. Generally, people in psychology come from, you know, psychology degrees. They have a master's mm-hmm. in psychology. Then you have different kinds of psychologists. You have a counseling psychologist. You have a clinical psychologist. Who's a clinical psychologist? Somebody who has an MPhil in clinical psychology, which is an RCI recognized degree.
Okay.
Right. And only
an RCI is?
Rehabilitation Council of India.
Cool.
So they give you a license for you know, training individuals as clinical psychologists, so an MPhil degree, right? And only these individuals are allowed to diagnose people with other mental health issues. So if you go to a clinical psychologist with your problems, right? So they have the authority to diagnose you with any kind of intellectual disability, with any kind of mood disorders, anxiety disorders, which is very different from a counseling psychologist, because counseling psychologists have the capacity for intervention. They can give you therapy, but they cannot diagnose you.
Okay.
Right? And it's very important to find out who is allowed to do what, who has the necessary qualifications, who has the necessary, skills and exposure to guide you correctly. So if you come to me for diagnosis, I would not do it and I cannot do it for you.
Right.
You either go to a psychiatrist or you go to a clinical psychologist. But yes, I can do interventions with you. I can provide you therapy.
But one psychologist can be both, right? Or is it just...
Yes, clinical psychologists are therapists. They are diagnose mental health issues.
Yeah.
Yes.
And they counsel people too.
Yes, they do everything.
All right. So coming back to the OCD now, let's say someone like me, or younger than me, much younger than me, someone in their late 20s, early 30s, find themselves, you know, dealing with behaviors they cannot understand, but they cannot pull away from it. Like Manvi explained it to us so beautifully. So how do they begin to seek treatment besides if they have like, if they have immediate access like Manvi had, but if they don't, how do they begin to, you know, seek treatment? Where do they go? Is there a helpline to it? Like it's in India, there are helplines are missing for most mental health problems. So how do they begin to, you know, deal with their problem?
See, either they can go to a government hospital near them that has a psychiatric department and they can see the doctor, right? And the beauty today is internet, cheap internet for everybody.
Yes.
So we have resources as well. So there are many
Thank you, Mukesh Bhai.
Thank you, Dio.
Sorry, I interrupted you. Please go on.
So, there are a lot of organizations that will get you in touch with the desired people. They might get you in touch with clinical psychologists. There is a list of clinical psychologists who volunteer on subsidized rates or even free rates. And it's possible to get diagnosed through them. Mm-hmm. Or you go to a psychiatrist, right? And, you know, when we talk about treatment of OCD, there are two ways. Either you take medication for this or you go for psychotherapy or CBT or other different kind of therapies. Okay. And the third thing, which is the most effective, is to do both. So depending on how bad the case is, an individual might decide what course of treatment would they require. Not everybody requires medication, right? But there are some cases that are so extreme, so severe that they are, you know, that has caused so much anxiety in the individual, and the ritualistic behavior has become very elaborate and difficult to manage, that they might need, medicines to help in that way, right? So the combination of both is always, the best route to go.
So, one thing, let's say, and this is just once again a hypothesis, but from a person who wants to understand this, let's say one person is going to a clinical psychologist and they are talking about it, and one finds either both of them or one of them finds the need of medication, then wouldn't they have to go to psychiatrist?
Yes, they would.
All right, cool. So this is, I assume, like I come from a very small town, and from a general Indian perspective, like small town, it can be daunting.
It is very daunting. We already have a national shortage of doctors.
Yes.
We don't have enough doctors, and forget having enough psychiatrists.
Yes.
Chalo thoda hua hai that there are new AIIMS in different parts of the countries.
Yes.
And because of AIIMS, there are going to be different, more accessible departments, which you might not have. But you can't go to AIIMS every time you want to see a doctor.
Most AIIMS, like most state AIIMS, don't have a... Like I know from personal experience, my ex-wife is an assistant professor in AIIMS Bhopal. So don't have a good psychiatry department. I know this firsthand. But I want to bring in Manvi for one thing. Manvi, I assume you must be in touch with other people who have OCD and you talk about it. You are a lived experience, you know. LE expert, I believe the term was?
Yes.
So
yes.
How difficult is it to find medication of OCD, even if it's prescribed to you in India? Because it came up in a couple of our episodes earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Even if your psychiatrist, you know, prescribes you the medicine, sometimes it can be hard to find the right dosage or the right combination or just the availability of medicine. Have you or people you have encountered, people you have met or, you know, engaged with, encountered this problem, at least in India, if not outside?
No, definitely, definitely. I'll tell you two things, actually, of how this has happened.
Yeah.
One, I myself, like some of the medications that I was given the very first time when I went to my psychiatrist.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, this is my personal experience. But, you know, that combination of medicine started to cause a lot of, you know, unhealthy changes in my body. You know, and one of those unhealthy changes was like very rapid weight gain. And another one was that I kind of had these tremors in my body. And, you know, I felt giddy, sleepy all the time and all of those things. So, like a lot of things started to happen. So it's kind of like, you know, I had to kind of with the right professional sit down and kind of find what combination actually works perfectly for me and suits my body, my brain.
Mm-hmm.
And then once we had found those, it kind of like, you know, went quite smoothly after that. So that's how, you know, medications, like even after they're prescribed, it kind of like takes time to figure out what works for you. Because even if you have OCD, like everybody's brain and body is different. And what might work for one person might not work for another.
Hmm.
So, you know, I always say is that let's not give it a one size fits all approach.
And the access to medicines, was it too difficult or is it too difficult?
The access to medicine is, I remember this one time I came to Mumbai and I had the prescription from my doctor in Kanpur.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I went around to the biggest hospitals in Mumbai, the biggest, you know, medical stores in Mumbai, and they all refused to give me the medicine because they said it's narcotic medicines and we cannot give it to you without, you know, the prescription does not have this, you know, they said this number of the doctor, that number of the doctor. And, you know, I arranged for everything and I was still not giving the given the medication, and they were finishing up just, you know, like tonight. I didn't have the dose for tonight and all of that. So it was kind of bad, but we somehow managed to arrange for it. You know, there was one point when we had to kind of like arrange for it in not such a legal manner, you know, in not such a on paper manner. But yeah, those things have happened. So I think access is definitely not easy in India to therapy or to medications.
Yes. So I think we have, in my opinion, we've painted a fair picture about this. In conclusion, first, you, Nipuna, what, anything you want to tell our listeners? And the last part is, like you were mentioning, the forums where people can approach, or, you know, or any helpline numbers, any websites.
Hmm.
Anything you want to add in conclusion?
Yeah. So when we've talked in depth about the medication part,
yes.
Let me just add a little bit about what therapy would entail in OCD.
Yep.
So one of the most effective ways of treatment is cognitive behavioral therapy.
CBT.
Right. And usme, the most effective way forward would be ERP, which is exposure and response prevention.
As Nipuna mentioned, the most effective treatments for OCD are CBT and ERP, besides the medication. CBT stands for Cognitive Behavior Therapy, and ERP is a type of CBT, which is called Exposure and Response Prevention. And medical websites in different countries and continents almost unanimously agree that it is quite effective in the treatment and management of OCD.
So it comprises of two things. First is exposure.
Mm-hmm.
Exposure happens in two ways. One is when you imagine the thing that causes you stress and anxiety or triggers you.
Mm-hmm.
And the second is in vivo, which means in person.
Right.
So you face the thing that is causing you so much stress and anxiety,
mm-hmm.
right? And so here we introduce the, you know, individual suffering through OCD in front of stimuli, which is very triggering to them,
yeah.
which causes a lot of stress. This is where the second part comes in, which is response prevention.
Okay.
Here, instead of letting them handle this anxiety by engaging in their ritualistic behavior,
mm-hmm.
we ask them to endure the stress and see what happens. because there's a lot of, dread and anxiety that entails this process, where they think that, you know, if I don't engage in this behavior right now, something very terrible is going to happen. So we ask them to wait and see that what's that terrible thing that's going to happen.
Okay.
And it might not happen instantly. It can take anywhere between 15 to 20 sessions for them to be adequately exposed and not react in a situation.
Yep.
And you have to understand that OCD is not something that you take a medicine and it can be cured.
Yes.
It needs to be managed. You need to learn the ways how to, you know, yourself manage these anxieties. And it's always not, you know, static. You're not going to be at 80% of OCD anxiety at all times. It can, you know, become easier. It can become more difficult when, a particular person is under a lot of stress.
Yes.
So it comes and goes, right?
There are outside factors which may influence it.
See, there are certain things. You would see that individuals who have a family history of, mental illness or family history of OCD, they're more prone to suffer through OCD as well. So there is some genetic factor. People are still trying to research on this, right? There are traumatic or, really jarring incidents a person could go through.
Yes.
Right? And that could trigger OCD. Another thing could be learned behavior as well. You can learn this kind of behavior.
Okay.
Right?
So they may get accustomed to it.
Yes. You can see somebody doing this and you can learn with this observation learning, right? So there are many ways it can manifest and there are many ways to treat it, but ERP has been proven to be the most effective.
Okay.
That doesn't happen. There are other ways.
So when I raised my finger when you were discussing the procedure, I assumed this would be a controlled environment.
Yes, it's a controlled environment. And this is not something you do over the internet.
Yes, of course.
So you
have to be there in person.
Yeah, because people love online therapy, which is great for a lot of things, but not for these kind of situations.
Yes. One thing I noticed, I sort of recalled from what Manvi was saying about the medication. A lot of medicines for mental health problems seems to have a side effect of like excessive and quick weight gain.
Yes.
this I think is a common problem, which I've heard from so many people. Like I cannot begin to tell you. May I ask why?
See, I cannot tell you why, because this is not my area of expertise.
Yes.
But all medications have side effects, but psychiatric medications tend to have really bad side effects.
Yes, that's why
somebody who's already stressed and depressed and you add the weight gain, you add the mental fog, tremors, confusion, all those kind of things, lack of sleep or sleeping too much.
Yes.
And sometimes these are the things you're trying to fix. You're already sleeping too little. You're already sleeping too much. You're already gaining weight. And, you know, sometimes it doesn't add up.
So it I'll tell you how it feels. And I think Manvi, in the end, may pitch in too. Like, I've already been dealt a bad hand. And now in fixing that bad hand, I'm being dealt the worst hand. It's a double-edged sword with both edges on facing me.
Mm-hmm.
So,
but
sadly,
medication is not a standardized thing for everybody.
Yes.
Everybody is going to react differently. Everybody is going to process the medication differently. And sometimes you have to change medication 2 times, 3 times, 4 times, 5 times to find the perfect fit for you, the perfect dosage for you. As for finding difficulties in, getting the right kind of medication, yes, it can be very difficult, especially when these are controlled substances.
Yes.
And it might happen that small pharmacies might not even get things like anti-anxiety medicines like Lonazep, जो बहुत commonly SOS के लिए दी जाती है.
Okay.
तो वो, you know, they don't even keep it. Even if they keep it, it's very regulated.
Cool.
They have to have your prescription. They have. They take your phone number and they have to, you know, maintain a record and give it to other people.
Yes.
Of course, there are ways to go around it.
No, but you shouldn't go around it.
No, people
get
do.
Get your prescription.
People do because there is no other option or they like to misuse it.
Yes, that is the danger. Like these medicines.
They're highly addictive.
Yeah, highly addictive and they change your brain chemistry essentially.
It does.
So the government at some point has to control it. We as patients may not like it, the hindrances and the bureaucracy, but there is a point behind it. But in conclusion, Manvi, one, what would you like to tell people who listen that how to deal with their OCD if they are beginning to find out they have one? What do they do? And of course, any forums or websites or helplines you want to mention which can help them or guide them on their own path and journey?
I think, you know, while we're talking about all these things, I also kind of want to take this chance to say that while therapy and, you know, psychiatry, medications, everything is definitely a solution and not necessarily always a solution, but is help and assistance for mental health conditions like OCD. But there's also other places where people can, you know, access help, which is like support groups. You know, I think those can definitely be of a lot of help, you know, and they may not always, you know, like, magically treat your OCD, but they can kind of like help you understand your condition, and they can kind of like sometimes help you find a weird sense of togetherness.
Yes.
You know, which is, you know, totally opposite of alienation and isolation, you know.
Yes.
You know, mostly what we tend to you know, when we have a condition like OCD. So that, and for seeking help, I think some of the forums, some of the places I would say are, you know, organizations like Sangat India, organizations like Mariwala Health. They're doing really, really great work. They have lists of, you know, people that professionals that provide free services, accessible services. And I think these are some of the places that, you know, people, especially young people, you know, like when we're talking about therapy or when we're talking about mental health services, there's also like a lot of intersections of them. So like queer friendly services, right? Caste friendly services. A lot of people, you know, those are very, very important nowadays. So I think Sangat and Mariwala, they're doing really great work in compiling lists, which have some really, really great professionals that are queer friendly, caste friendly, and you know, budget friendly, and all of those things. Take sessions both online, offline, everything. So I think
any specific support group or forum you thought was good, because it helps to find your own tribe, sort of a thing. Human beings are tribal by nature.
I'll tell you honestly, I remember like those times when, you know, while Nipuna was talking, I was getting like very strong flashbacks. She was talking of ERP, she was talking of all those things.
Yes.
So I honestly do not remember like any specific names, but I remember actually going online, you know, when I had these like peak anxiety moments, going online and searching for like, you know, places where I can just talk to somebody, like anonymously talk to, you know, somebody, and, you know, for mental health. And, you know, although, so I don't remember any specific names, but I do remember that there are such sites available online. But again, like, you know, privacy concerns and all of those definitely come into the picture.
Yes.
But yeah, I think there's definitely such services available, but one has to be a little careful while using them. So that another thing, like while we're like just on the end note of this podcast, is that my therapist said something which kind of like stuck with me. It's still, I still follow it a lot. And that was that OCD does not always go in waves or, you know, in a linear manner. It kind of like, even if you've come a long way with your OCD, it goes in spikes. So like one day it could be at a peak and the other day it could be just like, you know, you could be totally normal.
Yes.
So that was something that's, you know, when you're recovering, like sometimes you feel like, okay, I'm finally, you know, getting better. And another day your recovery, you know, you feel like, you know, I've not recovered at all. So I think one definitely needs to keep this in mind, that it goes in spikes. So yeah, this is something that's helped me a lot. And I thought, you know, it might be of help to whoever's listening to.
Yes. Anything you shared with us is of help for people. Believe me, even if we know about it, even if people with OCD who know about this would love listening to this, because it's always good to have, you know, another, if nothing else, confirmation bias, like I'm not alone in this world who's going through this shit. So thank you, Nipuna. Thank you, Manvi. And we'll have all these things in the show notes. And I want to start doing one thing. And please, our producer, I request her to remind me if I forget it. I found a lot of help in specific Discord groups, which in India people generally don't know about. And how Discord helps is you can find, of course, reading material, but there are voiced rooms also, and you can hide your identity. So it's very easy to hide your personal information and really talk to people, anonymous people too. And almost every topic has specific Discord groups, and it helps a lot. It helped me, and I know at least 50 people it helped. So yes, find your help and don't be afraid to ask for it. Thanks. A couple of places I can recommend are International OCD Foundation, NIMHANS, and one Discord server named Obsessive Compulsive Gremlins, where you'll find others who also live with OCD and are also happy to share their experiences. You'll find the links for these beneath the show notes. Remember, we are here for you. Thank you for listening, and do write to us if you have any suggestions, inputs about how we can better this podcast. This podcast was supported by Google News Initiative's News Equity Fund.
News Laundry is possible because of our paying subscribers. We don't run corporate or government ads. You too can be part of changing the news model. Go to newslaundry.com/subscription. Be a part of the community that pays to keep news independent. For the smoothest News Laundry experience, download our app. Watch our shows, listen to our podcasts, read our reports. Stay informed. Pay for news, protect democracy, save the world.